Welcome to another deep dive. Today we're taking a closer look at Micah 5, a chapter full of prophecy and intrigue. We're going back to 8th century BC Judea with Micah, a prophet who delivered some seriously stark warnings, but also some glimmers of hope. It's kind of like a roller coaster of emotions, you know?
It really is. It's fascinating how Micah masterfully uses this condemnation promise cycle. He doesn't try to sugarcoat anything. He just lays out the consequences of Israel's actions, you know. But he always offers a path back, a promise of restoration. It's like he's saying, hey, things are messy right now, but don't despair. There's a way back to the light.
Okay, so Micah opens chapter 5 with Jerusalem under siege. He calls it the daughter of troops. And then to make things even worse, to add insult to injury, a judge is struck on the cheek.
Yeah.
That's not just a physical blow, right?
Absolutely not. Just imagine what that image would have meant to Micah's audience. A judge, you know, symbol of authority and justice, publicly humiliated. Micah's painting a picture of a nation in crisis, a nation stripped of its power and dignity.
Okay, so you're in Micah's audience. Your world is falling apart around you. You know, everything feels hopeless. And then suddenly a prophecy hits you like a bolt of lightning. A future ruler, a savior, is coming. But from a tiny, seemingly insignificant town, Bethlehem Ephrathah. That must have been a lot to process, right?
Oh, yeah. It's such a powerful juxtaposition. Despair on one hand, a glimmer of hope on the other. And Micah isn't talking about just any king here. He uses the term mashal, which implies a leadership that goes way beyond politics. It's rooted in something something much deeper, maybe even divine. This ruler's influence, it extends way beyond earthly boundaries, back to ancient times.
Okay, wait. So not just a king, but a divinely appointed leader whose influence stretches back through history. Yeah. Okay. That's starting to feel pretty epic.
Exactly. And then Micah throws in another curveball. He uses this image of someone in labor, giving birth to this ruler. Now, some people might try to connect this to the birth of Jesus, but in this context, it's more likely a symbolic birth. It's not a literal mother giving birth, but Bethlehem itself. Bethlehem is what gives rise to this powerful figure.
So it's like Bethlehem is the metaphorical womb, nurturing and birthing this incredible leader. Yeah, this is really making me rethink how we see the origins of power and influence.
Exactly. And this idea of new beginnings, of a fresh start, it's not just about the ruler. Micah also talks about him gathering the remnant of his brothers. Now, is this a reference to the scattered Israelite tribes? Or is it hinting at something much broader, more inclusive gathering of people from all walks of life?
That's an idea that really resonates with me. Unity under a compassionate leader. It just feels incredibly relevant today.
It really does. It's a theme that echoes throughout history, that longing for a leader who can bring people together, heal divisions, usher in an era of peace and harmony.
Okay, but hold on a second. Micah also describes this ruler as a shepherd. Now, we usually associate shepherds with gentleness, with caring for their flock, but Micah also describes this shepherd standing up to the Assyrians. Mm-hmm. And they were basically the superpower bullies of the ancient world. How do we reconcile those two images?
It's a good point. I think it's a reminder that true leadership isn't just about, you know, passive gentleness. It's about having the strength to protect and defend, even against overwhelming odds. Micah is saying this shepherd isn't afraid to get his hands dirty, to fight for what's right.
So it's not just about leading the flock to green pastures, but also about defending them from the wolves.
Right. Precisely. And Micah doesn't stop there. He says that 7 shepherds and 8 princes will rise up. Now, clearly, he's not giving us an exact headcount for a leadership team. It's a it's more of a poetic way of saying, look, no matter how daunting the challenge, there will always be enough leaders to face it. It's about an abundance of strength and guidance.
7 shepherds, 8 princes. It's almost like Micah is giving a pep talk across the centuries. He's saying, don't worry, there's an army of shepherds ready to guide and protect you. You've got this.
It's a message of reassurance and resilience. You know, even when faced with those seemingly impossible odds, Micah is telling us that there will always be resources, that that leadership will emerge.
And it's not just about ancient Assyria, is it? It feels like Micah is using them as a stand-in for any giant we face in our lives. You know, those moments when we feel totally powerless. What are those Assyrians for you? Those systems or situations that just feel overwhelming, where you just want to throw your hands up and say, forget it, I can't win.
That's a powerful question. We all have our own Assyrians, those forces that seem unbeatable. But Micah is reminding us that even in those moments, there's a source of strength we can tap into, a promise of adequate resources to overcome any obstacle.
Okay, so we've covered a lot of ground here. Micah is really challenging us to rethink leadership, resilience, and where we find strength when facing adversity.
It really is a timeless message. You know, it speaks to something deep within us, that longing for guidance and strength when we're facing those Assyrians in our lives.
Yeah, it's like he's offering us a roadmap, you know, for navigating those overwhelming situations, showing us where to find the resources and the resilience that we need to overcome them.
Exactly. And remember those scattered Israelites we talked about earlier, the ones compared to dew and showers. Micah's audience, they would have instantly understood what he meant, the life-giving power of those elements, especially in a dry land like Israel.
Right. Without dew and rain, there are no crops, no sustenance. But how does that connect to the Israelites being scattered? It seems kind of counterintuitive, you know?
Well, Micah's suggesting that even in their dispersal, even in their exile, the Israelites still have the potential to nourish and bring life to the nations around them. It's like he's saying, hey, even when things seem bleak, you still have something valuable to offer.
So instead of viewing exile as this purely negative experience, it becomes an opportunity, a chance to spread their influence in a subtle but profound way, like seeds scattered by the wind, you know, taking root in unexpected places.
That's a great analogy. It's about recognizing the potential for growth and impact, the potential that can come from challenging circumstances.
Okay, but then Micah throws in that lion imagery again.
Yeah.
He describes the remnant of Jacob as a fierce lion tearing through its prey.
Yeah.
And it's such a stark contrast to that gentle image of dew and showers. How do we make sense of that?
Aunt Micah is a master of juxtaposition, you know. He's highlighting that duality of the remnant's nature. They can be both life-giving and fierce, adaptable and resilient.
So they're like those wildflowers that can thrive in even the harshest conditions. Delicate, but resilient. Mm. But they can also unleash this fierce power when they need to.
Exactly. Don't forget, these are people who've endured exile, oppression, scattering. And those experiences have forged in them a strength that can manifest itself in different ways. Sometimes it's quiet and nourishing. Other times it roars with righteous anger.
And Micah doesn't let us forget how intense that lion's power can be.
Yeah.
He uses this phrase, treads down in tears and pieces, and there is none to deliver. It's a vivid picture of their strength.
It's a reminder that even those who have been marginalized, oppressed, underestimated, well, they still possess a power that shouldn't be underestimated. They might be scattered, they might seem vulnerable, but they have this this latent force that can erupt when the time is right.
You know, it makes me think about those times in history when marginalized groups have risen up and demanded justice, and they end up surprising those who had underestimated their strength and resolve, like the civil rights movement, or the fight for women's suffrage.
Exactly. Those are powerful examples of the lion within roaring to life, demanding recognition and respect. Micah is tapping into this deep well of human experience, and he's giving it a prophetic voice.
Okay, so we've got these powerful images.
Uh-huh.
Dew showers a lion. And remember, Micah places this remnant in the midst of many nations. Why is that placement so important?
Think about where Israel is geographically. It's a crossroads, a bridge between continents, a melting pot of cultures. Micah is emphasizing that the remnant's role isn't to isolate themselves. They are strategically positioned to engage with the world around them.
So it's not just about surviving in exile. It's about influencing and impacting the nations they're scattered amongst.
Precisely. Micah envisions a remnant that plays a significant role in shaping the course of history, despite their hardships. They're a catalyst for change, a force to be reckoned with.
It's amazing how much Micah packs into just a few verses.
He's a master of imagery and metaphor, you know, using them to convey complex ideas and challenge his audience.
And then Micah brings us back to that theme of victory and deliverance. He says, "Your hand shall be lifted up over your adversaries, and all your enemies shall be cut off." Now, who is the "your" here? Is it God acting on behalf of the remnant, or is the remnant themselves taking action?
That's the beauty of Micah's poetry. You know, it's open to interpretation. The phrase "lifted hand" is often used in the Old Testament to signify God's power. So it could suggest a divine intervention. And here's where it gets interesting. The phrase "your hand" could also be referring back to the remnant of Jacob. Micah might be suggesting that they'll play an active role in overcoming their adversaries, not just passively waiting for deliverance.
So it's about agency. about recognizing their own power to shape their destiny.
Exactly. Micah is empowering his audience, helping them to see themselves as agents of change, not just victims of circumstance.
And then comes the final twist. Micah describes God cutting off horses, destroying chariots, cutting off sorceries, rooting out Asherah images. It feels like we're right back to that initial condemnation from the beginning of the chapter. Is this God turning against Israel again?
Not necessarily. Remember, Micah has been talking about the remnant being in the midst of many nations. So these pronouncements might be directed at all nations clinging to false gods and oppressive practices, you know, not just Israel.
So it's more of a universal message. Oh, the consequences of straying from what's right and just.
Exactly. Micah is reminding us that true strength and security, they don't come from military might or material possessions. They come from aligning ourselves with divine will, not relying on earthly power or false idols. And the way he repeats cut off, you know, it really emphasizes the finality of that judgment.
It's interesting how he links idolatry with military might. He's saying that putting your faith in horses and chariots is just as dangerous as worshiping carved images.
That's a great observation that he's drawing this parallel between the outward trappings of power and the inward corruption of idolatry. Both lead to destruction. Both are futile in the face of divine justice.
And then he hits us with that powerful line, and you shall bow down no more to the work of your hands. It's like a direct challenge. So the very idea of idolatry, worshiping things we create rather than the creator himself.
It is. It's a reminder.
Yeah.
That our ultimate allegiance should be to something greater than ourselves, something that transcends human limitations and ambitions.
And he specifically calls out Asherah images, you know, the fertility goddess. It's like he's adding another layer to this this critique of idolatry.
Absolutely. He's challenging the worship of false gods, but he's also critiquing the systems of power and oppression that are often associated with such worship.
He's not holding back at all. He uses some really strong language. In anger and wrath, I will execute vengeance on the nations that did not obey. It feels like the culmination of all the warnings and pronouncements we've heard throughout the book.
It really does. Micah is making it clear that there are consequences.
Yeah.
Consequences for turning away from what is right and just.
Wow. What a journey through Micah 5.
Yeah.
So many vivid images, stark warnings, and ultimately a powerful message of hope and resilience. Mm-hmm. After going on this deep dive, what are the key takeaways for you?
Well, Micah 5 is really like a tapestry. It's woven with these threads of warning and hope and this promise of ultimate victory. You know, even when facing defeat and exile, there's this unwavering belief in a powerful ruler, a gathering of the scattered and the uprooting of evil from the world.
It's like we got a pep talk from Micah himself. He's saying, hey, I know things look bleak right now, but hang in there. A brighter future is coming. A force for good will prevail. Do you think that message is specifically for the Israelites, or does it have a broader application?
You know, while Micah's prophecy is definitely intertwined with the fate of Israel, it also transcends time and place. It speaks to that universal human longing for justice and peace, for a world free from oppression.
That's what makes it so compelling, even after thousands of years, right?
Yeah.
Those themes of exile and oppression and hope and redemption, they're woven into the fabric of human experience.
Absolutely. We all face challenges. We all experience those moments of darkness and despair. But Micah, he reminds us that even in those struggles, there's a possibility for transformation, a chance to tap into that that source of strength and resilience that helps us overcome adversity.
It's interesting because Micah's prophecy is so rooted in the context of ancient Israel. So how can we, in the 21st century, regardless of our background, really connect with this message?
That's the question, isn't it? That's the question each listener has to wrestle with. Micah challenges us to examine our own horses and chariots, you know, those things that we relied on for security and power that might actually be leading us astray. What are those modern day idols that we work? The systems of oppression that we perpetuate, the false promises that we cling to.
It's easy to get so caught up in the day to day, to focus on our own immediate needs and desires. But Micah forces us to zoom out, to see that bigger picture, right? And ask ourselves, am I on the right path? Am I aligned with what's truly just and good? What are my horses and chariots?
Exactly. And he reminds us that that true strength, it isn't found in military might or material possessions. It's about aligning ourselves with a greater purpose, with those principles of justice and compassion and righteousness.
And even though Micah was speaking to a specific audience in a specific time, mm-hmm. his messages really echo through centuries and cultures. Those themes of exile and oppression and hope and redemption, we see them playing out in different ways throughout history. Right up to the present day.
Absolutely. We all faced our own personal exiles, our own forms of oppression. But Micah, he offers this incredible message of hope. He reminds us that even when things seem bleak, even when we feel lost and alone, there's always a possibility for a brighter future, a more just world. And it's up to us to embrace that hope and work towards making it a reality.
That's the power of diving deep into these ancient texts. They can give us such a fresh perspective on our own lives yes. and challenges. Micah 5 is a potent reminder that even when things feel overwhelming, there's always hope. There's always that potential for transformation and renewal.
Beautifully said. It's about recognizing that spark of hope within ourselves and then fanning it into a flame that can illuminate the path forward.
And on that note, it's time to wrap up our deep dive into Micah 5. But we want to encourage you to continue the conversation. What parts of this deep dive resonated with you? What are your horses and chariots? Share your thoughts and insights with us on social media. We love hearing from you. Until next time, keep diving deep.